They were on page 23 or 24, depending. I mean, are there many of these ones that what I'm using from, Shantiji? Like my one says 24, but it seems a lot of the other ones say 23. Are there many of these 24? Means that it's 23.
Most of them say your number.
Oh, okay. So most got my number. So we're on 23/24. References from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhagavad Arkamruchi Mala. In his book Bhagavad Arkamruchi Mala, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts this verse from Canto 2, Chapter 1 within the Abhideya division, assigning it specifically to Chapter 13, entitled Aikantiki, Namashrayash Sadhana Bhakti, taking shelter of the holy name. 2.1.11, Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj Prakrit. O King, constant chanting in the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. And so this is an essential point in that this chanting is the process, right? Means we're going into all these technicalities, but as Jiva Goswami is pointing out, we shouldn't get lost in it, right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say we're discussing cooking, and let's say we get into a discussion about the cumin seeds, right? The different kinds of cumin seeds, and the sizes, and the fragrances, and where you get them, and how you deal with them, and how, you know, you put them out in the sun and dry them a little bit so that they're not soft, and this and that. We could go on and on and on, discuss for a long time. But in that, we shouldn't lose sight of the cooking process itself, right? It's just, in other words, a detail that you know now, so that when you do your normal cooking, then you're more aware of what's happening. Does that make sense? So all this technical detail is unlimited, right? Ananta, yeah, has been discussing this since time immemorial with a thousand mouths, and he's still talking today, and he will be talking eternally, right? So there's plenty to talk about, right? So we have to be careful that in this, we always come back that this is actually the point, right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, these details are important, but at the same time, as we shouldn't get distracted. There are those who will not be interested in so many details, but we only just keep it simple, right? What is it called? The KISS principle? Keep it simple, stupid, right? Or those who will like to get right into, you know, all the little details and this and that and completely forget what we're doing, right? Does that make sense? So this comes under the category of niyamagraha, the tendency to throw things out because of lack of interest or lack of seeing their purpose or getting too caught up in them and taking that as the actual focus. Yeah? So here he's bringing out that actually this is it, and it applies to everybody. Those with material desires, who are free from material desires, those who have all material desires, those who are actually liberated, and those who are actually situated in the devotional platform. It works for everybody. It's perfect like that. Yeah. The Thakur counts these verses within the Abhideya section, assigning them specific to Chapter 11 entitled Abhideya Vichar, Analysis of the Process. Okay, so here also the other point is taking shelter as an aspect of Abhideya, right? Means that you understand the philosophy that that's what I should be doing, that itself is sambandha. You understand the relationship, but actually doing it, that's Abhideya. Does that make sense? Like, I understand my relationship with my father, right? He's the father, I'm the son, right? That's sambandha. But that I act within it, I surrender to that, and I apply that relationship, that's Abhideya. Does that make sense? Okay. Abhideya Vichar. Analysis of the process. This is 2.1.13, 12, and 2.7.11. Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prakrit. The saintly king Katvanga, after being informed that the duration of his life would be only a moment more, at once freed himself from all material activities and took shelter of the supreme safety, the personality of Godhead. What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interest. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. The lifetime of such an envious household is passed at night, either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime, either in making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of Atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. O descendant of King Bharata, one who desires to be freed from all miseries must hear about, glorify, and also remember the personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul, the controller and savior of all miseries. The highest perfection of human life is achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty, is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. O King Parikit, mainly the topmost transcendentalists who are above the regulative principles and restrictions take pleasure in describing the glories of the Lord. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. We see this verse also as the previous one. But it's also, there's so many aspects within it, because it's such an essential verse, it can be looked at in many different ways. Right? So here we see is that this is vichar, means analyzing the process from different angles. So we see here is that there's the element, still is the aspect of surrender. Surrender and valuable use of time in Krishna consciousness. Right? This is a common element here. So Maharaj Vangri had a moment to live, so he utilized that moment. Like nowadays you see someone is sometimes diagnosed as terminally ill. You know, you have 3 months to live. So then what would be expected is one like Maharaj Katbanga, one takes that time and gets into some serious Krishna consciousness. But some will take it that they will try and get into extreme sports that you could get killed, but they're going to die anyway, but at least you died having a good time. You know, so they'll do things they never would do, you know, go mountain climbing or what do you call it, parachuting, or, you know, something completely insane, right? I saw a picture of one guy coming down this, you know, completely insane side of a mountain on one of these little dinky bikes, you know, these little funny bikes, going off the cliff on the bike. Then, because it was a huge gorge and ravine, and down in the bottom was a river, then, you know, doing some whatever he does there, and then pulling his parachute, and then landing in the freezing cold water. Right? And it's just kind of like, I guess it's getting too bored, you know, it's not challenging enough to sit on the couch and push the buttons on the remote anymore. Right? So here it's recommended you use it to surrender rather than, you know, waste it. So that's being brought here. So what is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? So experience means the moments of full consciousness. Remember if we told the story of Parasara Muni, who was 8 at the time, and Markandeya Rishi, who was as old as Brahma, basically. And Maitreya is the oldest of all the sages. He was giving the lecturing on the Vyasasan, but he gave that seat to Parasara, because even though Parasara was younger than him, you know, only 9 years, you said his moments of consciousness, you know, full consciousness, were more in his 9 years than it had been for Maitreya in his, you know, so many millions and millions of years. So he considered that more appropriate. Parasara was the Vyas. I'm not sure if it was the last or the last Kali Yuga or the Kali Yuga before. So that would put us, we're in the 28th Maha Yuga. Yeah, day of Brahma means in the 20. We're in the 28th cycle. Let's see. No, we're in the 14th mano, the 28th. That puts us in the 28th Kali Yuga, this one. So that would have been 27 or 26. And Brahma is 51 years old. Right? So that means this would have happened where Maitreya would have been like 150 trillion years old. Right? Because Brahma lives for about 311 trillion years. So. Is that okay? So this is bringing out as better a moment of full consciousness, because that's real, right? You may have so much illusion. You may be, you know, have deeds to unlimited, you know, mirages in the desert. You know, you got this most fantastic mirage of a whole city out there rather than just one coconut tree and a couple of bushes, right? But what's the use? It's not real. Does that make sense? So that's about a person who are materially engrossed. They have many subject matters, right? They're this is what I was just talking before about Bahuyan, many branches. They have thousands and thousands and thousands of desires, and so they're not focused. Those who are able to prioritize those thousands of desires and focus on the most important ones are the people we call successful in the material world, right? They have also unlimited desires, but they're smart enough to focus. And those who are not successful don't focus. They just get washed by these desires. Does that make sense? But the devotee is like over here. Mainly the topmost transcendentalists who are above the regulated principles and restrictions take pleasure in describing the glories of the Lord. They're focused. Right? So that's the thing. Materialists will be unfocused. It means they have thousands of desires, and the devotees are focused. They have no desires, so they're only interested in the Lord. So as devotees, if we make the Lord prominent and then make our life go around that, it will work for us. Right? And then whatever material needs are there, prioritize and take care of those in their order of importance. Does that make sense? Then at least on that platform we'll be successful also. Right? But the point is being brought out is the more you have material need, the less you have need for Krishna. Does that make sense? The less material need, the more need for Krishna. Right? It was a big point also in this chapter. Is being pointed out. Those, as you reduce the material desire, you have more interest in association with the devotees and in taking up spiritual subject matter. Yeah? Then we have the famous seriously politically incorrect verse here. The lifetime of such an envious household is passed the night either in sleeping or sex indulgent, and the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. I mean, it is pretty straightforward. But so the point is this is envious. So that means these aspects are not connected to the Lord. Because these four things that is mentioned here are the activities of a grihastha. So that's not the problem. The problem is if one's envious, one's not connecting it to the Lord, one's not seeing it in relationship to the Lord. Does that make sense? Therefore, that's the downside. These activities go on. That's actually not the problem. The problem is that they're not connecting it to Krishna. Alright? So that's why then in here, the universal form is described so that one can connect one's dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. In other words, these four aspects, this is what the universal form is made out of. Right? These are the human needs, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That's what the thousands of heads and legs and arms and eyes are doing. Right? So you connect that to Krishna, then one becomes purified and one is freed from that. One doesn't, then one is like this envious householder, wastes his time. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah, devoid of atmatattva. So these things there, they're attached to these fallible soldiers, means that you put your faith that these will protect you, these will save you. But do they? That's the point. So the only, how you say, so the materialist thinks they do, they get absorbed and they take birth again and again and again. The devotee knows they don't, but because I have these attachments, then we will play through this like drama, this play, where I, you know, work on these needs, the others who are also in this drama, they work on those needs, and in this way we engage those needs in Lord's service, and we, in this way, bring ourselves where we are more absorbed in Atma Tattva than we are in these other things. Does that make sense? Okay. And those who are free from desires must hear about the Supreme Lord. Right? The Savior of all miseries. Why does somebody want to be liberated? Because they're miserable. Right? That's why they want to be liberated. So we see it's brought out here. He's the Savior from all miseries. He's the controller, because the impersonalist wants to be the controller. And his inspiration for liberation is the problems that he has. Right? Big problems. Like that. So he must, because otherwise he will come back. Because the Jnani can't remain on that platform. You will come back and be absorbed in karma again. Right? So it's imperative that they must take up glorifying the Lord. Otherwise, then whatever gains they've made will be lost. Right? They've, with great pains, freed themselves from so much material entanglement. They will be entangled again unless they take up hearing about the Supreme Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So we should always keep that prominent, that that's the real thing, not getting out of the material world, but being absorbed in Krishna. That's actually our main focus. Does that make sense? We're only interested in the activities of getting us out of the material world, because those things that keep us in the material world keep us from hearing and remembering Krishna. Right? It means always remember Krishna, never forget. So dealing with this aspect of the universal form means those elements that are making us forget Krishna. So we engage them, we trick the mind by engaging in the Lord's service. Therefore we have those moments we remember the Lord, and what we don't remember the Lord, we connect to Krishna, which takes it back to the Lord. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so now here he's showing us that by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, as we've been discussing all these technicalities, by practice of mystic powers for the yogis, or by the perfect discharge of occupational duty, those who are very much in the Dharma and the elements of Varnashram, is to remember the Supreme Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So these aspects of the karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, the perfection of all of those is to be absorbed in the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? Yes.
You said before that the impersonalist, if he merges in the Brahma Jyoti, he will fall down and start cycling. But if he merges in, so how can he have a personality, or, you know, how comes he suddenly falls down?
He has consciousness.
He has consciousness.
Yeah. It means you're thinking of Buddhists who extinguish the candle.
Yeah.
That's Buddhists. They don't go to the Brahman. They go into the Garbhodak mud. It's dark down there because they're not in the light. You know. So everywhere else has got some light. You know. The impersonalists think, I am Brahman. Right? So they're happy to get out of the material world. But after a while, that happiness wanes. Because it's only in the difference that you get pleasure. Does that make sense? It's hot outside. Well, let's reverse that now. It's cold outside, you go into a warm room. Right? So only when you walk in, then you go, ah, this is nice and warm. But you stay there for 5 minutes, it becomes normal. Someone who's in the warm house isn't all day going, wow, this is a nice warm house. Because you feel normal. You only can appreciate it when there's a difference between it, when you've come from the cold into the warm. Does that make sense? So, therefore you merge into Brahman, and so therefore for a few moments you'll appreciate it, but after a while, that you're just sitting in a light going, I am Brahman, you'll get really bored. So, one life of Brahma is 3/4 of a second. right, on time outside the universe, right? So how many seconds you can sit there and appreciate? So you take 5 minutes, so you take 5 minutes divided by 3/4 of a second. So, you know, some lifetimes of Brahma, you'll be out there. So from here, we'll think, oh, that's forever. But from that time, your experience, you'll be out there, you know, 5-10 minutes, you know, and after 20 minutes, you're starting to go, you know, you have no thumbs to twiddle, remember? Right? There's no remote. There's, there's no dial-up pizza delivery. I mean, you got problems. You can't go out for a walk. You know, there's nothing that you can do. In other words, you're so pained by the material world, but then all those things that would give you shelter, you'll take shelter of. That's why it says here, the impersonalists, or those who are freed, who are liberated from the material energy, must surrender to the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, they just got a few minutes before they're entangled again. You know? Does that make sense? Like that. The Shastras don't talk about yes.
How can one actually appreciate the Brahman after merging into it? There is no quality.
You're appreciating, not so much appreciating the Brahman, you're appreciating not being in the material world. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you go into a warm house, the house is there, but you're really thinking, oh, it's so nice to come out of the cold. You know?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, there isn't anything to appreciate in the Brahman. What's there is only the negative. That's why we say it's not actual happiness. Because it's still material, because it's... Yeah, it's just removal of pain. It's just like you take a hammer and you're hitting yourself on the head. Then when you stop, you go, oh, that's nice. So the definition in the material world of happiness is removal of pain. That's all it is. Anything that you call happiness, if you think about it, it's only removing a pain. Yes?
So if he's still individual, how can you imagine a Brahman?
When you look at a beach, what do you see? Do you call it, there's, you know, how you say, 10 to the 500th power of sand, I mean, individual sand grains sitting here in this location? Or do you just call it a beach? You think of a beach as a conglomeration of individual grains of sand? Or do you just think of it, this is a beach, and if you ask what's the beach made out of, you'll say sand. So the Brahman is the Lord's effulgence with a lot of living entities floating around in it. So you can be an individual in Brahman like that. It's just the mind, you see, it's like, in other words, whatever you're into, they don't tell you the whole thing. Like, let us say you have some friends, they like skiing. What are they going to talk about? How long they were in the hospital in traction with a broken leg, or how all their friends and how other people have been killed and guys have frozen to death, and, you know, is that what they talk about? No, they talk about, you know, the exhilaration of going down a fresh powder slope and this and that, and right? Right? The guys that think it's, that don't want you to go out skiing, you know, like your mother, then she talks about, you know, all the broken legs and freezing, you know, losing, you know, the ends of tips of noses and fingers and toes and stuff like that. Right? So, therefore, the impersonalists only talk about what they see as good about the Brahman. They don't talk about the shortcomings. Just like in the Karma Shastras, they only talk about what's nice about it. They say you go to the heavenly planets, one is deathless, right? But they don't actually explain what deathless means. Deathless means one is, you live there much longer than here, so you live here 100 years, there they live 10,000 years or, you know, a million years. So from here it seems that it's deathless, but over there it's still 100 years. Your perception is the same, right? The bug lives 2 weeks, but he feels it's 100 years. We say it's only 2 weeks. So the same way for the demigods, you know, their experience is 100 years, that's all. But for us, it's greater. But the Shastras that deal with that don't tell you that. The Shastras that deal with liberation do. They tell you it's useless. And Amara means no one dies in the heavenly planet itself. you will be removed from the heavenly planet and die outside. You know, it's just like we say, this room is deathless. No one dies in this room. And if someone starts going, oh, oh, then we pick him up and take him outside. Right? And he croaks out there on the road, right? Does that make sense? So that's how it works. I mean, no one throws you out, but just basically the ground gives away and you disappear, you know. So you're sitting there with, you know, family and friends or, you know, saying something romantic and then gone, you know. You know, move on to the next one. Right? Right? And you die in the space between the heaven and the earth while you fall from heaven to earth. So, you know. Therefore, the heavenly planets are Amara, deathless. No one dies. See, so that's only explained in the Upanishads, which is dealing with the liberation. But it's not described in the Karma Shastras. So in the same way, the weaknesses of the impersonalism is only described in the Bhakti Shastras. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. Yes, so that's fine. The Thakur counts this verse within the Abhideya division, assigning it specifically to chapter 14, entitled Bhakti Pratikulya Vichar, Analysis of the Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti. Sukadeva goes 2.1.15, Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prakrit. In the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. So this element of being bold enough means that you can do it. You can actually be independent. No one is going to blame you. Right? If at the time of death you don't think of your relatives and you think of Krishna, they will not blame you. You have to have that. You will not have shortchanged them. You will not have let them down. And they will not think badly of you. You have to be bold enough to take that step. Right? Because there's a thing, I should think. That would be what they would want. But it doesn't matter. You're dead. They don't know what you thought of. You understand? You're gone. And even if you did think of them for that moment, okay, great. And then? How is that? For, you know, oh, nice, you thought of me at the time of death, but then after they got to move on with their life, you're not there. Does that make sense? So the whole thing, we have to be bold enough to, that, yes, you can do that, and it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. Right? And as devotees, okay. Does that make sense? So that boldness must be there to actually take that step. Right? Because you don't want to do something, if you're in a strong relationship, you don't want to do something that would disturb that other person. Right? Of course, because then you don't want to be disturbed yourself. But, you understand? But here, you can just cut off, and it's fine. It's right. It's correct. You have not let down anybody. Right? Because actually it's a temporary situation in which the various individuals agree to take part in this so-called drama. Does that make sense? So that's something being bold enough. Right? Why would they use bold? Because it's something very bold. The husband is with his friends and it's time to go. And they say, why are you going? Stay here with us. You have to be bold to stay. Right? Of course, possibly stupid, but you know what I'm saying? Because he thinks when I get home, there'll be trouble. Right? But here, you're leaving. So you can just cut clean. You have to be willing to do that. And then you connect yourself to Krishna. Because that's what Krishna wants to see. Right? He's a person. So relationship means you are active in that relationship. So we say, Krishna, you're everything, you're all this. So then we have to be bold enough to do it. Right? To not think of all those arrangements, oh, if I'd only done this, or if I just stay a little bit more, then we're not. We can't stay. We're going. Gone. Right? So those moments must be like Maharaj Katvanga, just surrender to the Lord. He's glorious today. Right? We're not going, wow, look at this guy. He surrendered to the Supreme Lord. You know, it doesn't even mention here that he thought about his wife or tried to make some arrangement in that last one moment. He just thought of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Everybody could do that. Right? So not doing that is unfavorable for devotional service. Right? That's why it's here in the Analysts of unfavorable conditions. Right? So, one should not be afraid of death. Okay? This is what's nice, is we see these verses and how the Acharyas will classify them. That's why this study is here. Bhagavad Arkamarichi Mala is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, like, shloka book. He's taken some hundreds of verses from Bhagavatam, important verses, and then categorize them according to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And in each of them, then there's many, many chapters. Right? Like that. So it's basically an expansion of the Dasamul. The Dasamul has one aspect on Shastra being, you know, everything coming from authority, one point on Abhideya, one point on Prayojana, and seven on Sambandha. Right? But in Bhagavad Arkamarichi Mala, he expands that out, so you get 20. So you have those original seven, and then the one of the Shastra becomes four aspects. Abhideya he expands, and Prayojana, so he gets more. So it's basically the same thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's here. So we just see it from different angles. So this is all the Vichara. Okay. Appendix 182. Items of general interest and important verses. The following verses from Canto 2, Chapter 1 were often quoted by Srila Prabhupada or traditionally considered key preaching verses. 212. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, leave many subject matters for hearing. In human society, O emperor. Right. Yeah, because means the soul has knowledge, right? Sat chit ananda. Chit means knowledge. So they must know something. You have to know, whatever it is, whether it's gossip, whether it's, you know, quantum mechanics, it doesn't matter. Soul's got to know, right? So if you know about God, you want to know about God. But if you're not interested in God, you will want to know about the material energy, right? Does that make sense? Griyamedi's life. The lifetime of such an envious house. Okay, we discussed that one. Fallible soldiers, we discussed that one. Vaidhi Bhakti. Yeah, we discussed that. Ante Narayana. So, yeah. Ante Narayana Smriti. Okay, it's the same verses. Okay, here in the Bhagavatam to attain firm faith, page 28, 27. That very Srimad Bhagavatam I shall recite before you because you are the most sincere devotee of Lord Krishna. One who gives full attention and respect to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam achieves unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord, the giver of salvation. So here, full attention and respect. Right? In other words, I don't understand it, but I know it's right, but so therefore I'll make the endeavor to understand it. Right? Rather than I don't understand it, there's some fault in it. Right, then we won't get anywhere. Right? Because vichara means there's different angles of vision. So I may have caught one. But there's so many angles. Like you see how many verses Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave in this one aspect of this Abhideya vichara. 9. They just fall in this. Right? Does that make sense? So he's given 9. And each one of them kind of takes a different angle, but it's the same thing. Right? It's the same thing, but different angles of vision. From the transcendentalist point of view, from the devotee's point of view, the materialist point of view, the gross materialist point of view. Does that make sense? So we understand it in one way, that's good. So we have a basis in that. Then we hear another perspective. Then we try to see what's common, because then we're able to, when we apply it in our life, able to connect more of what we are, what we deal with, our field of activities, more to that point. Does that make sense? If we have one example, then if that situation is there, we can apply it. But if the situation changes, right? Does that make sense? You're taught to sell a book at a mall. Okay, so then, you know, you're shown how to go up, talk to the people and everything like that. Then after the person that showed you how to sell the book in the mall, then they drop you off at a parking lot. Then you think, well, what am I supposed to do here? They only taught me how to sell books in a mall. No, they taught you how to sell books. Right? The mall happened to be the detail. If you understand the principle of selling the books, it doesn't matter if you're there or in a train station or an airport or, you know, going door to door. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is there'll be some, but there is some difference, right? Depending on where you are, the people are different, how you deal is slightly different, but the principle remains the same. So the idea is, through a particular verse, it gives a particular detail, you're trying to understand the principle. Having understood it through that medium, then vichar means you will see other angles so you can see it, how to apply it in different situations. Does that make some sense? Right? So that's the importance of looking at it from different angles. Right? It makes one think. It may hurt, but it's good. Right? You know, it's just like doing, if you haven't done the exercise, the first push-up is really hard. You know, if it even happens at all. Right? But then after a while, then it gets, and then you feel good. Once the brain gets some exercise, then, you know, in the beginning it may hurt, but after a while, then it's quite happy. Right? Okay, so, yeah. So he's reciting because he's sincere. Right? So that's, Bhagavatam is very kind. If we're sincere, we have that respect, then everything will be revealed. We'll get unflinching faith. Right? Is it Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai? No, that's not one of the verses. The one it means, if you have unflinching faith in Guru? Yeah. So then you'll get that faith. Right? It will be revealed. Okay? So that sincerity, then when we'll be able to have, which will give us that faith, having that faith, then everything will be revealed. Okay? So we see Prabhupada, many times he's saying, just be sincere. Right? Just, we actually want it. Or if we don't want it, we want to want it. You know, or it's the famous lecture by Jayapataka Maharaj. If you can't cry for Krishna, then you cry to cry for Krishna. If you can't cry to cry for Krishna, then cry to cry to cry. But like this, he went on for 5 minutes. You know, got the point across. In other words, in some way you should want it, you know, how, no matter how removed you are from reality. Harinam for everybody. Okay, so this is fearless way for everybody, facing death. Okay, so we did that. Okay, so then after this, then we have the chapter homework assignments. So we have all students for full impartial, full credit only. Yeah. So then, I guess we'll have to wait on this for Maharaj to finish his his exposition on the Western philosophy, to do this last, this 9.194, where you're comparing the Western and the Eastern. It means if by reading this you can understand it, then, you know, go ahead. But in other words, you're trying to connect this elements of Shankar, Shampajumna, Adiruddha, and Vasudev, and if there's any comparison between that and the Western philosophy, and where their strengths, what points actually are strong, but actually what their weaknesses, where they fall short. Okay. And then he has at the end here, there's an extra credit assignment that can be done. You can get more points. That means in our system, it means you have your you know, regular points you get, but there's extra stuff you can do, you can get more points. That doesn't mean then later on in other areas you should consider, well, I don't have to get any points because I have more points, because that will, that mentality means one's not bold enough. So, okay. So then those things, I'm not sure then those can be worked on, and that can be turned into Shanti Parayana G here, like that. Okay. So any other questions or anything on this chapter one? No? Second canto, chapter 2. There's no questions, but we have the answer to question 27 is continuing. Pratigya, solemn statement of purpose of this chapter entitled The Lord of the Heart is directly given by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to verse 6. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 18:61, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the all-pervading, omnipresent Supersoul. Right, so we want to confirm that God, who is omnipresent, all-pervading, he is the Supersoul. Right? He's not somebody else like that. For us, it means for the yogis and personalists and this, then they are actually understanding Krishna's position. For us, it's also important to use it in the aspect that we don't make that much distinction. You make too much distinction, you cannot operate this process. That's why the sahajas don't get out of the material world. Because they see Krishna, but they can't see how Krishna's expanded into everything that's actually very important to them. Does that make sense? Once some devotee was making some comments about Vishnu, Krishna's this and Vishnu's that, Prabhupada said, don't make so much distinction. It's the same person, just different mood. Does that make sense? So for that to manifest fully that mood, Krishna only needs to manifest a portion of his qualities. You know, so however much portion is needed, that much is done. Does that make sense? Like something you do. Let us say you're cooking. So how much of your personality and intelligence you need to apply there? Right? So how much that is, that's how much you'll give. You're doing something else. You know, you're walking down the road. That may take a little bit less intelligence and focus than cooking. Right? So you only have to manifest that much of your personality. Right? Let's say you're walking across an 8-lane highway at, you know, rush hour. That may take a little bit more focus than walking down a dirt path. Right? Does that make sense? So for us, it's different scenarios that we go through in our daily life. But for Krishna, all of those things that he does, he expands, and then he himself just does this or just does that simultaneously. So he takes a particular form in a particular situation with his associates in a particular form that works. Right? Like in Vrindavan, he's there and he plays out in the forest, you know, as boys, right? Because if you want to play as boys, then houses and other things are restrictive. You can't do anything you want. You know, you can't throw things around. You can't break things. You can't jump on things. You know, you have a thing called a mommy that will make a lot of trouble for you. So therefore, for boys to play, there's nothing better than a forest, right? Because you can do anything out there. Does that make sense? So when Krishna wants to play with his friends, he goes to the forest. Right? They could play there and Mother just showed his courtyard, but they don't. They go to the forest because that's the better place. Right? But you want to take lunch and everything and all the arrangements, then the forest isn't as good an arrangement as in Mother just showed his house. Does that make sense? Okay? So like that, then you pick the place and the associates. Now, there he has Sridham and Sudham, they're his main friends. Right? They're the main leaders of the cowherd boys. Now when he goes to Vaikuntha, where he's God, then therefore, then it needs to be all opulence and everything very orderly, and, you know, they live in forts and all these different things like that, and guards, and, you know, very nice like that, because that, you know, here's God, so therefore. And then Sudama and Sridham come as Garuda and Hanuman. Does that make sense? Because that's a better form for relating to their friend who's now taking the mood of God, so therefore then they become his carrier and like this. Does that make sense? So like that. So it's he does that. So for us then we don't see that much difference. We know it's a difference in mood and this and that, so of all the different things he does, we like this the best. Right? Just like you have a friend and they have so many aspects in the life they do that is there. You like particular aspects of that. Right? So you're there, that's where you would like to associate with them. Right? Isn't it? Does that make sense? Like, the mother will like it when the child's at home, they're taking care, they're feeding them, they're, you know, interacting with them and all that. You don't see the mother necessarily going out there with the boys out there on the, you know, the cricket pitch and, you know, getting involved, you know, or in the rugby match, or, you know. You know, your ma's there in the scrum, you know, so with a rolling pin, of course. So, does that make sense? So, she prefers interacting with the kid on this aspect. Right? And his friends prefer out on the scrum pitch. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So, everybody has their taste. That's rasa. So Krishna is all of this, and where your taste lies, that's where you want to associate. So we're being given the opportunity to take advantage of developing that taste for serving Krishna in Vrindavan. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. In verse 6, by his use of the words Bhagavan Ananta, the eternal unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Sukadeva Goswami means without a doubt that Sri Krishna himself is the Lord of the heart. As Karshaneyas, devotees of Krishna, Sukadeva and Purukit know that the Purusha avatars who create, maintain and destroy the material world are Krishna's four arms, swamps of forms. The Lord declares to Arjuna, 10:42, Bhagavad Gita, Ekam Sena Stito Jagat. By a single fragment of myself I maintain all the material universes. Because that's just a single fragment. So, in other words, all this, if we think this is pretty amazing, then this is nothing. This is only a fragment of how Krishna manifests himself in the spiritual realm. That's so much greater. And then the greatest manifestation is Krishna in Braja. Does that make sense? Chapter 2.2, chapter 2. The Lord of the Heart. Adhyaya Prakashika, the chapter at a glance. Sri Sukadeva Goswami now gives a direct example of a person who purified his intelligence through meditation upon the universal form, that of Sri Brahmadeva. Unfortunately, less intelligent people who are bewildered by the Vedic Shabda and thus become enamored by the various temporal features of the universe. Sukadeva makes clear that the eternal truth of the Lord's form can only be understood from the position of renunciation of such illusory sense objects. By service and worship, one so fixed in renunciation can realize the form of Bhagavan as the supersoul within one's heart. Here, renunciation means giving up the desire for the result. Right? It doesn't mean that, you know, you just put on kopins and go off into the forest. Right? Here, he is perceived by the bhakti yogi in his transcendental form of Lord Janardana, who displays for his devotees his beautiful smiling face and his magnanimous pastimes. Sukadeva Goswami sets forth two different ways of reaching the spiritual sky, and thereby getting emancipation from all material bondage, namely, one, the direct process of reaching the kingdom of God by bhakti yoga, and two, the gradual process of ascending via mystic yoga, the other higher planets of the universe until the spiritual sky is achieved. Srila Sukadeva presents these two paths exactly according to the version of the Vedas. The chapter ends with Sukadeva Goswami's personal recommendation of the bhakti process. particularly the hearing, chanting, and remembrance of the glories of the Lord. Verse 36. Shrotavya kirtitavyascha smartavyo bhagamandaninam. Okay, so we've established Krishna is the Lord of the heart. He's the worshipable deity. And the so through devotion is the best way to do. So we can go through the direct process, which is taking up, cultivating that devotion, those things favorable to that, or the gradual process where you use the mystic yogic system. So when they say gradual, we mean gradual. Right? Depending upon how you want to do it, you can go very gradual, meaning you take up perfectly following the path of karma. By following the path of karma, you will get jnana and detachment. Then you'll be situated in jnana. From there, then you go through the jnana like this. And we see that you can do this millions of births each section. Millions of lifetimes in karma, millions of lifetimes in jnana, millions of lifetimes in jnana. Right, we have in Brahma Samhita then it's saying that the yogis, by drilling the respiration for millions of lifetimes, still can't see the toenails, the effulgence of the toenails of the Lord. Right, so we're talking in so that's very gradual. If you want to take it more direct, but you want to go through, you are enamored by the whole varnashram and all these different things. This becomes more prominent. Then I think it takes 14 lifetimes, I think, I don't remember, to get from where you are now to back to Godhead. That's how the Madhvas work. Right? They don't have this thing of this life, you just remember Krishna, go back to Godhead. They go from here, they move up, and then they go to, you know, like the yogis, they go over the Shishumara, they get to Brahma Loka, it's a whole rigmarole. But that's the standard Vedic method. Right? That's how you're purified, get out of the material world. You have to go through all that. But the devotee, by being absorbed in the Lord in devotional service, then it's direct. It just goes from here to the spiritual world. Right? You'll go through all that, but it'll be more, rather than a rigorous thing to go through, it'll be more of a guided tour. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? So this is we can see is that the essential statement is that Krishna is the super soul, and then here is that the chapter summary is then saying that super soul then can be worshipped by the direct postures of devotional service, or through the gradual process through the mystic yoga, and of the two, Sukadeva Goswami recommends hearing, chanting, remembering the glories of the Lord. In other words, the devotional process. Is that clear? Any other questions or anything? The watch stopped. Really? So what time actually is it? Because I was looking at the big hand. Didn't even notice the little hand. It's strange. It's actually 5 to 9, even though the clock says 5 to 3. That's quite amazing. Because I came in and started the class according to the clock. And they said, we have 5 minutes now. It's actually by Krishna's mercy. Okay. Clock stop. Can that be fixed? That's very important to have that fixed before Thursday. We notice it's sitting there across. That pillar is exactly opposite this pillar. Okay, I think that is otherwise the first section of Shlokanushananam is actually quite large. So I think we'll take that up. 15:21, 8 to 4. Where is 1 to 7. Up to here. Yeah, no, it's like 2 pages, that, so we'll start. Any questions on anything we discussed today? Anything? Yes.
Is there an
I mean voidism and nirvishesha shunyavada.
They're
not worried about a destination. See, that's the difference between the impersonal and the Buddhistic. Basically, the there's a slight difference, general. Impersonalism, their goal is Brahman, to merge into the Brahman. So that means the individual identity, the soul itself remains, though his individual identity is lost. But the Buddhists don't acknowledge the soul. Right? So their thing is that because you think you're this, but they don't explain exactly who is thinking that they're this, that you identify with the material world, therefore the interaction with it gives you pain. If you give up your existence, then there's no interaction, so therefore no pain. So the example is given of blowing out the candle. You know, it's not that you use the candle for this or use the candle for that. It means the candle stops existing. The flame stops existing. Right? It means, in other words, the flame is burning off the candle, right? The material existence. You get rid of the flame, then it's gone. So that's kind of their idea. So in other words, what's happened is this: when you engage in karma, then it doesn't work. So then you reject karma and take up jnana, right? The impersonal path. When you don't become satisfied from that, then you become angry and take up Buddhism. Then it's nothing. In other words, a spiritual suicide. It's just, you don't exist anymore. Does that make sense? So that's it. Vitaraga bhaya krodha. Attachment, fear, and anger. Right? So these are the three material, positions. It means you're attached to interacting with the material energy, or you're fearful your relationship with God, or you're just angry at everything and just want it all to be over. Right? That's why it's destructive. Like, anger is destructive, because you remove everything. Does that make sense?
But the soul is eternal, and how could just by their thinking, oh, I want to not exist,
It doesn't happen. They only think it happens. Right? In other words, they become detached from the material energy, so they're not disturbed by anything. So then they consider that they've attained their, Buddha-ness,
At the time of their death, where would they?
From what I've heard, they go and get stuck in the Garbhodak mud. Because it's, dark enough down there, so there's, they figure something's happened. But they don't leave the material world.
In a similar way, when they're in the mud, then because obviously they realize they haven't lost their identity at some point.
And at some point they'll come back.
I
don't know. Yeah. And they'll come back and get into karma again. But because they're angry, then anger lasts a lot longer. Isn't it? Means you've come in out of the cold weather into the warm room, or the hot weather into the cool room. You'll be happy there for 5 minutes. After that, you'll be involved. You'll just sit down and, this is so nice, right? Sit in front of the fan and the AC, and then, so nice. But after 5 minutes, when you're not feeling hot anymore, then you'll get up, look for something to eat, something to do, something, right? But now, let us say you're angry at somebody. You can sit there the whole day, right? So therefore, it's a bit more dangerous. Does that make sense? But still, at some point, you can't be angry forever. That make sense? Okay. Oh, I did wrong. Still got five more minutes, but okay. Okay. We'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanatai Gaurupremanandi.